I actually learned Proverbs 29:18 when I was quite young. In fact, I learned it in the King James Version, which, as it turns out, is not a particularly good translation of that verse. It's a little bit misleading. But it's still been one of my favorites, and it's a verse that I've sort of built my entire career on. And I would bet, actually, quite a few of you this morning are familiar with the King James Version of that verse, which is, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." Where there is no vision, the people perish. Where there's no vision, people are lost, and they're confused, and they end up dead. Now, I just love that stuff. You know, as I said, I've made a career out of it, and I think about it both in the big context and the little context. Vision in that corporate, you know, what's our vision as a group, but also vision in the narrow sense, what we see and how visual language works. And in fact, I kind of need to confess that quite late last night, as I was working on thinking about this chapel talk, I was thinking, why am I doing this? It would be so much easier to pull out of my, you know, PowerPoints in my computer a talk about visual language and vision and media that I've done lots and lots of times. In fact, you may wish that I had done that, because it would be far more entertaining. I would have brought the PowerPoint thing with clips and pictures, and we could have had fun laughing about how vision shapes us and how vision enters our minds and our hearts, and what that does with us. But that's not what I'm going to talk about this morning. I have been caught and captured by the signs that somebody put up that said the topic for chapel this morning was media and ministry. I'm not sure who came up with that. I'm not blaming anybody. I don't think I did. But I've been thinking all week, well, media and ministry. How do those things go together? Well, certainly if you're working 2100, there's a literal way in which they go together. You know, we work in ministry doing media all the time, and that's easy. But how about for all of us? What does it mean that we live in a media world and that we're in ministry? And that drew me to this particular proverb: where there is no vision, the people perish. You think about this for a minute. Healthy people have a vision. They have some dream. They have some idea. They have some notion. They have some hope for the future. Right? In fact, if you talk to psychologists, when they meet somebody that doesn't have any hope for the future, that person's kind of in trouble emotionally. So vision is something that's pretty significant and important to us. We know that it's important to organizations. If you go to my library at home, you can find a whole section on leadership. And a huge part of that section on leadership is about vision and casting the vision and talking the vision and visions that are internal and visions that are external. In fact, one of the first things that Alec did when he became president of InterVarsity as our leader was to help us articulate our vision in a vision statement. And vision statements are actually crucial. I mean, actually, they help us understand why we're here this morning, what we're trying to do, what the ultimate goal, the aim, and what we want to see accomplished. It's a picture of the future, right? We want to see young men and women going out into the world to transform that world, to make it more like the kingdom. I think I'd go so far as to say that you and I were created to need a vision. Now, that's certainly true post-fall. We live with a sense of what the future ought to be. Our primary text, the Bible, ends with a picture of how it's going to be. We quote chapters and verses out of that. You know, we have our multi-ethnic vision, and InterVarsity comes in some sense out of the picture of what all peoples and nations and ethnic groups look like gathered before the throne in heaven someday. And as we face the turmoils and the issues and the struggles that happen to us on a daily basis, we do so with a vision of, well, it's going to come out in the end. You know, this is how it's going to be. And let me tell you, as you get older, the need for that sense of vision actually increases. You know, the need to know, because you just lose your ability to make everything the way you think it should be, and you get to the point of saying, well, fortunately, I know how the story ends. I know the final score of the game. I know where we're going. We are people that, in order to live, need a vision. It's actually very important to us. The question is, how do we get that vision? Where does that vision come from? Well, we live in an information age. We live in what we call a media age. And let me suggest to you that maybe Proverbs 29:18 should read, where there is no media, the people are lost. Where there's no media, people don't know much. Without media, they don't have the information they need to live. Now, I want you to think about this for a minute. Do you realize that almost our entire notion of reality comes to us through the media? That is to say, we deal with, we experience, we learn about reality through something else. This is Marshall McLuhan's classical definition of media. It's through something. It's a medium. You know, we get our information through things. And that's the way you and I live, particularly, you know, in the 21st century, you know, where almost all of our experience comes to us through something else. I'm using the word media here in the broadest possible sense. Certainly it includes, you know, television and movies and radios and music and internet and newspapers, lectures and images and all that sort of thing. But it also includes a lot more than that, as we'll see in a minute. Humans have actually always depended upon media to learn things and to understand things. It's not a particularly new idea, but the level at which it's coming at us in today's world is pretty astounding. I used to say that we got some 200,000 advertisements pushed at us a year. That comes out to about 35 or 40 every waking hour. The material I've been reading most recently says it's six times that amount. You know, we're just about, and I'm only talking about advertisement now. I'm not talking about all the other kinds of things that come at us as media. In the 21st century, media is ubiquitous. It's everywhere, it's everywhere, it's everywhere. You know, we're constantly being bombarded with ideas. There's nothing that we know that doesn't come to us about media. Think about this for a minute with me. Events in history? Sure, we experience some, but the big events in history? 9/11? How do you know about 9/11? Well, you saw it, right? You were there on a television screen, sort of. You know, you experienced it in some form or another. Everything you know about that event is through the media. Whole periods in history, we understand through the media. Some of you in this room were not alive in the 70s or the 60s. I was. I've had the fun of going to some of your 70s parties, and it's really intriguing to see how you interpret that. But you actually have a pretty good idea of what 70s culture or 60s culture was like, because you have a media view of it, right? You've been taught through the media what that looks like. How many of you know Barack or Hillary? Nobody's raising their hand. But yet, we know about them, and we make decisions, and Wisconsin made decisions last night, you know, based upon the media images. Even what those candidates believe comes to us through the media. We can go to their websites and look at their position papers and study the various things that they're interested in and how they're talking about that. But it's media. I'd like to suggest to you it goes way beyond that. You know, what are the things that you don't experience through the media? Well, the wilderness. Certainly the wilderness. You need to think about it. All your images of what the wilderness is are brought to you by the media. You know, we all have images in our head of cascading ice, you know, in the Antarctica where we've never been. We have pictures of mountains in our head. We have pictures of streams. And if, perchance, we actually go out there to have a first-hand, unmediated experience, we do it through our Gore-Tex shells and our Gore-Tex boots and our, you know, our fiberglass canoes or our, you know, high-tech bikes. You see, even our experience of something like the wilderness, we have through something else. Our nylon tents and all that kind of thing that make us you know, sort of surround us out there in the wilderness? Food? No. Well, think about grocery stores and restaurants and the ads. You know, we can't eat Mexican food or Chinese food without it being contextualized with a whole bunch of art and colors and other things. Our understanding of what those things are comes from the media. You certainly walk down the grocery store, you're going to cook at home, you're not going to go, well, think of what the media is doing to you to tell you whether you should buy regular Cheerios or Honey Nut Cheerios or, you know, some other form of healthy whole grain Cheerios or whatever the case may be. All of our understandings of basic things like food come to us through the media. Certainly that's true of coffee. You know, we go to Starbucks and we have our coffee in one environment. I was with the Urbana team last week, I guess it was, and we were in Santa Barbara, and I knew there's a coffee shop there called Java Jones, and Java Jones is kind of the alternative coffee house in Santa Barbara. So if you go to Java Jones, the barista has multiple piercings and tattoos, and their hair is not a normal color at all, and the entire environment around that coffee, you know, it's this kind of alternative coffee. And their coffee is really good. You know, alternative people take coffee seriously. And when they make a cappuccino, they do it right. You know, I mean, I'm a Starbucks fan. I like Starbucks, and I like the homey atmosphere of Starbucks. But they don't do cappuccinos like Java Jones does. It's just a whole different experience. It's a mediated experience. You know, my understanding of coffee. Certainly true of family. You know, we all get our ideas or images of what family should be out of the media. Some of you, you know, have watched the Brady Bunch, you know, you kind of go way back. But Two and a Half Men and all those shows that are current give us pictures of what family ought to be. I'd suggest to you even basic stuff like birth and death, in my experience, is a mediated kind of experience. When we had our kids, and that's quite a few years ago, you know, we read books from Lamaze. You know, we saw movies. We all kinds of things to help us interpret and understand what birth is. And some of you know that Donna's dad just died, so there's a whole raft of books about grief and how you go through death and what it means to process that. You know, even death. So birth and death become mediated experiences. Obviously, it's true of worship. The ideas you have of what it means to worship come to you through some kind of church experience or some kind of other group of people that have taught you about that. And you may have been taught that, you know, real worship is if you raise your hands, or you may have been taught, you know, real worship is you kind of quietly fold your hands behind you in a Presbyterian church. You may feel like, you know, in order to really worship, you have to clap. You know, some of you may think, no, you don't clap at all. And some of you think, well, to really worship, you ought to try and clap, but you can't get it right. So that would be me. When you think about God, all that we know about God is a mediated experience. You know, Jesus says in John, no one has seen the Father except the Son who he sent. And then he goes on to say, and the Son has made him known. Everything we know about God comes to us through the work of his creation. The heavens declare the glory of God. You know, we sang hymns this morning about how, you know, God is known in his creation. His history, how he's dealt with his people. You know, that's an experience that tells us about who and what God is. His text, his scripture, and ultimately his Son. You ever think of Jesus as a media? You think of Christianity as a media religion? We wouldn't be here today without media. And actually, this whole notion that we learn about things through other things is pretty fundamental to our understanding of Christianity. The incarnation, the putting on of flesh and entering our world of a God thing that we can't understand. That's a media experience. We talk about metaphors like salt and light. You are to be salt and light in the world. You are to be a media in the world around you that helps people understand about God. Your command to be witnesses, pay attention to what God's doing so that you can bear testimony to him. It's a media kind of thing. Everything we believe about missions, all our discussion about missions, have to do with being quality media in the world around us. As Jesus says, as the Father sent me, so send I you. We play the same role, media role in the world, that God plays and that Jesus plays for God. Now, let's take this one step further, because actually Jesus does a whole lot more than just give us information about God, right? He helps us understand God in context. That's what the word incarnate means. And context comes to us through story. It's the stuff that surrounds it. And that's how contemporary media develops its power in our life, is it tells us the story about how things ought to be. It takes all kinds of decisions we make about what we're going to buy, how we're going to think about things, and it places them in a story of some kind. So maybe Proverbs 26:18 should read, where there is no story, the people don't understand much and are bored to death. Imagine if the TV commercials the last week, you know, had been Barack standing up and simply saying, the bottom line, vote for me. Followed by Hillary coming on and saying, vote for me. Imagine if the chairman of the board or the president of Procter & Gamble, you know, if the TV commercial was, buy this deodorant. Imagine if the news was, President Bush signed bill number 715694 today. And that was it. See, no context. You know, and we don't actually get a whole lot out of those kinds of things. We actually need the context. So news people and advertisers put some story around what they're trying to tell us. And we watch political campaigns, or have until last night. We probably won't see any again for a while here in Wisconsin. That create a story about Barack or Hillary. And they show them in this context, and they begin to look presidential or not presidential, you know, depending on your particular view of that. We need context to make much sense of information. We certainly learn that when it comes to evangelism in our own movement. We've relearned that. You know, one of the things that's happened in evangelism most recently is we figured out that students on campus didn't just want to be told the gospel. They wanted to experience the gospel. They wanted to see the gospel lived out in some kind of story. So we have a little catchphrase like belonging comes before believing. People need to join a community and be part of what's going on. They need to get the media experience. They need to have this interpreted. They need the gospel put in the context of real lives for it to make sense. Now, you know, the wonderful thing about stories is they just add all kinds of complexity and questions. You know, they call for involvement in some ways. We get to identify with the characters. There's these emotional hooks that are part of the stories that help us get involved. They hook our emotions and pull us in. And of course, that raises the two big issues that we think of when it comes to media. First of all, there's just way too much of it out there. There's too many stories. I sat last night as I was trying to think about what I was going to say this morning and get it clear in my head, and my son, who's working at a restaurant here in town, came home late, and we got into a conversation, you know, a father-son conversation, and his angst in life is, Dad, there's three stories that I'm struggling between. One of those is grad school. You know, I'm doing this kind of junk job at this point to earn money, and I've been thinking I was going to go to grad school. You know, and that's a story, and I can, you know, that would lead to being a faculty member someday, and you know, that's very appealing to me. But you know, I'm having this great relationship with the guy that owns the restaurant I'm working with, and he keeps saying to me, "Forget grad school, become a partner. You know, manage one of my restaurants for me, own a restaurant someday. You're great at this, you love it." He says, "That's another whole story. That's another whole picture, a vision of what my future could look like." Well, he went on to tell me a couple more that were there in terms of, well, that, you know, I'll bet some of you feel that. As you sit here and think, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? And the very multitude of stories out there give us options that we can think about. I could do this, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this. And the other great problem with media in our world is that some of those stories are true,
And some of those stories are not true. Not all media passes on accurate pictures of reality. How many of you have heard a book called Unchristian? It's come out recently. And Unchristian is about Christians who are not being good media, who are not telling true stories about what Christianity is. And the numbers are just downright terrifying if you read that book in terms of how the culture is responding to the media story that Christians put out there. Well, we also know that lots of TVs, lots of movies, lots of ads don't tell us the truth. And that affects our understanding of our body images. It affects our understanding of what we ought to wear, you know, what kinds of things we ought to spend our money on. You might think of this in terms of where there is no true story, the people go astray. Where there is no true story, people go astray and they die. You know, if they don't die physically, which sometimes is the case, they die emotionally and they die spiritually. You know, the truth of the story becomes absolutely crucial. And my guess is if we were to talk about media in kind of a populist way, that's where we go in our conversation today. I'm not sure how I got to speak in chapel this morning, but I have a feeling with some comments I made months ago when we were having discussions here at the NSC about our internet filters and what our internet filters ought to do and what they ought to block and what they ought not to block. And we were in a conversation, we were talking about, to be candid about, we were talking about pornography and the embarrassment that some of us have when you type a wrong key and the wrong thing. I hope nobody's looking, you know. The genuine offense that some of us take when that happens to us. And I said, you know, that's a significant issue, and I'm concerned about that. And certainly we have an obligation to help each other remove temptation, you know, from that. And that maybe is a good reason for blocking that. But if you really want to block where there's temptation, you know, for most of us in this world, don't worry about the pornographic sites. Everybody in this room knows that they ought not to be there. Block Amazon.com if you want to deal with temptation. Because the fundamental problem of Western society, you know, sexual issues are huge and they're a big part, but it's not sex, it's materialism. And some of us think that every book that comes out they should own and have a copy of so they can touch. And Amazon.com has gone beyond that, so you can now buy anything. You can buy tools on Amazon.com. If you want to deal with the temptation that people at the NSC face, get real. Deal with the temptation of materialism and block Amazon.com. You folks. Now, thank goodness they didn't do that. Because my life would really be messed up. But see, there's the issue. In a media culture, we become blind to the things that are influencing us. And we begin to adopt ideas of what's normal because they're out there, because we see them all over the place. And we draw conclusions and assumptions as to how many pairs of shoes I ought to have. And we make subtle decisions about the clothes we wear based upon I want this kind of image or that kind of image. We make decisions about what's fun. You know, I have an ongoing debate with my kids, and I don't want to get into this with any of you, about whether or not video games are fun and whether this is healthy stuff to be practicing killing people. You know, I brought up before that, and I just have some questions about that. And I wonder how many times you can kill somebody on a screen and have it not affect your view of what other human beings are. Where should I spend my money? Where should I eat? You know, I grew up in a family where, you know, we went out to eat once a month, and it was a really special, big deal. Well, what's normative in our culture? What do you see on the screen? How do we do it? You know, whole bunches of us go out to lunch every day. We eat food that's not particularly good for us, and it's expensive. And we do that because the media tells us that it's a normative kind of experience. Well, so how do we get the story straight? Both our own story as Christians, you know, because we need to be good media in our culture. How do we protect ourselves from false stories in the culture? How do we figure out, how do we discern what's true and right? Actually, the Hebrew for Proverbs 29:18 is far better translated by the NIV and the New RSV. And it goes something like this: where there is no revelation, the people cast off restraint. Where there is no word from God, people go wild. Without a clear sense of what God is saying, people are confused. And again, the result is they perish. They die. The Message, Eugene Peterson said, and I just love it: if people can't see what God is doing, they stumble all over themselves. But when they attend to what he reveals, they're most blessed. It's just a little bit ironic to me that this week, when talking about media and thinking about vision, I'm involved in two Bible studies that happened during my week. And one of them, the one that I'll lead next Sunday at church, is focusing on Romans. I've been going through that after staff conference, and we've come to Romans chapter 12. And Judy, you know, led us in that. You know, talked a little bit about that, you know, several weeks ago. And most of us were at staff conference, and we heard a pretty good exposition of the first part of Romans 12. Do you remember? Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good, acceptable, and perfect. Now, something about what we do with our minds, what we think about, what we take in, the stories we allow to shape us, makes a difference, according to Paul. So that's one of the Bible studies that I'm working on. The other one, and you know, I didn't plan this. This is just accident, right? If you believe in those kinds of things, is Philippians. And in the 2100 team meeting on Monday, we looked at Philippians chapter 4. There's a lot in chapter 4 of Philippians that's just fascinating. But verse 8 has always been one that intrigued me. Paul is near the end of his life. He's probably in a Roman prison. Some scholars think that this is some of his very last advice that he gives to his Christian friends and churches. That may not be true, but that some scholars think that. And he comes to a point in Philippians near the end where he says, "Finally, beloved, those of you who I care about, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things." And the Greek is actually better translated, "Let your mind dwell on these things." So you come to chapel this morning, you're looking for some advice as to how you deal with media culture and how you deal with all the temptations and the pressures and the options in a media culture. Read Philippians 4:8. Let your mind dwell on these things. Ask the simple question: are these the things that my mind is dwelling on? Staying on track by focus your eyes and your ears on what God is doing. Live with your eyes fixed upon Jesus. I'd actually like to suggest we close this morning by singing a prayer. I'm sure Shirley will come back. And the prayer is number 18 in your hymnals. It comes back to this word that I love so much: God, you be my vision. God, you be the one who shapes my understanding of reality. Let's stand together and sing this as a prayer for our day and for the rest of our week as we work here. Shirley? Some of us know that we're struggling with the temptations brought upon media, confusion. But let me suggest to you that those of you who are not struggling with that ought to be. You ought to be struggling to make God your vision.